all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday. Good afternoon. Hope you're enjoying your weekend so far. Last time we convened for White Sox Weekly, the Sox were in the midst of a three-game losing streak. Since then, they are 5-1, having reeled off five straight before last night's unfortunate loss to the Cubs. Now, of course, that definitely sullies the start of the show ever so slightly, but I will go ahead and point out that if you're a White Sox fan like I am, just remember, big picture view here, the baseball has been so much better here from the Southsiders, and even though last night's loss, I know, was not exactly what White Sox fans were hoping for, it would have been so sweet to turn that five-game winning streak into an eight-game winning streak to wrap up the weekend, but that was not to be. But the good news is the White Sox, because of their hot run here, and I should point out, not just this past week where they had that five-game winning streak, two against the Mariners, sweeping the division rival Royals right out of town, but it's not just over that period. It's really for the last month or so, the White Sox have been playing much better baseball. Of course, the opening road trip was an absolute disaster. The White Sox went 1-6 and really did struggle in a lot of facets of the game. But since then, the White Sox have clawed their way back to 500 to the point where everybody around baseball is taking notice. The type of play, the style of play the White Sox have shown us a different way of winning baseball games. They're not only reliant on the long ball, although I'll point out when they do hit the long ball in games, they're generally a good bet to win those games. But they're also showing the ability to occasionally win with some small ball as well. That's something we saw take place this week during that five-game winning streak. So just the fact that they're showing ways to win baseball games in different manners, I think, is definitely a good barometer for where this team is headed. And as again, I noted, they've won five of their last six. They did lose last night to the Cubs. They have Davis Martin on the mound today. He has been their ace. He has been their stopper all season long. So the fact that the White Sox have him going is an added benefit, I think, to try and take what is ultimately only one of 162, but I know Sox fans, you're probably with me. This weekend, the Crosstown series against the Cubs always feels a little bit bigger. And I do think as a fan, it is bigger because if you're like me, the interactions you have with the daily people in your lives, inevitably, it is impossible to avoid having conversations and trash talk with people in your life about, unless you're one of the absolute extreme diehards who have cut all Cubs fans out of your life. Now, if you do it, fine. Fan how you want to fan. I'm not going to criticize you for that. However, it is very hard for most Sox fans to take that extreme step. So assuming that you haven't cut out all the Cubs fans from your life, this series always does bring on a little bit more importance to the fan base because you're going to have conversations with people, and there are bragging rights on the line at least until August. And so the White Sox are under the gun when it comes to needing to win the next two if they're going to make their fan base even more excited about where they've brought them to so far this season. And I wanted to mention now, with the win against the Royals on Thursday, the White Sox moved to over 500 for the first time since October 2022, when the White Sox were 81-80 under Tony La Russa in his final year as their manager. And I'll point out, too, that season, I think most Sox fans would agree, was not a good one. Even though they ended the year 500, there were much higher expectations coming off of a playoff berth the year before in 2021. The hope was that the White Sox could build on that with the young core and 81-81 certainly felt like a losing season because of what was expected of that team. Now, here on, we sit on May 16th with the White Sox now 22-22. And let's add in the fact that nobody in the American League Central has gotten off to an incredible start. The Guardians are currently in first place at 24-22. So the White Sox are one game back, but I'll point out too, they have two games in hand. So they are tied in the loss column with the Guardians. Theoretically, the White Sox could go ahead and win every remaining game and have themselves tied up at the very worst. Or if they won every remaining game, they would control their own fate. So that is a lot of positives for this team. If you want to look at it from the macro, not just the micro of last night, in which it was somewhat disappointing. But let's take solace in the fact that the White Sox kept coming back. And that's something that Will Venable discussed earlier this week. And he was asked specifically about the team never quitting. They just keep going after it no matter what the score is. And this was Will Venable's response to that.
I think that's accurate, and that's one of our superpowers, I think, that these guys continue to play nine innings, that they do it really to a man. You know, every one of these guys understands that they're making an impact. They're all contributors to our environment, to our energy, and they all play a role. So I think it's accurate, something that we feel every day.
And that was the case last night. We'll relive some of the highlights right now. The Cubs jumped out to a 1-0 lead in the first, bottom of the first. White Sox come right back. Colson Montgomery at the dish.
1-2 is hit in the air out into right. Suzuki's back. He's at the fence. It is gone. And we are tied at one.
Carson Kelly of the Cubs would bring it home a run to make it 2-1. Michael Busch would double, making it 3-1. Seiya Suzuki would double after that. And all of a sudden it was 4-1. But the White Sox kept coming. Drew Romo doubles in. Andrew Benintendi making it 4-3. And then Miguel Vargas, who, I'll tell you what he's been able to do, the growth he has shown so far this season, he is quickly becoming, I think, my most trusted person at the plate, no matter what the situation is. And last night in the bottom of the sixth, he just reinforced why.
Rollison to Vargas. First pitch swing and a fly ball deep right field. Way back there. And it is gone. We're tied. Miguel Vargas makes it 4-4.
Nothing funny about that.
Unfortunately, DJ, by the way, will join us at 4 o'clock today here on White Sox Weekly, so I'm going to pick his brain about what he's seen from the Sox so far this year. But unfortunately, the Cubs did have the last laugh last night as they go on to win 10-5. Vargas' home run in the bottom of the sixth to lead off the bottom of the sixth was just another instance of what Will Venable was talking about. The team never quitting. They play hard for nine innings, and as he called it, he believes that's their superpower. And that's something that I think we've really gotten to see quite a bit here over the last 3 weeks in which the White Sox have been playing winning baseball, playoff caliber baseball, as Jared Kelnick called it the other day. Unfortunately, though, after Vargas homered to tie it up in the bottom of the sixth, there was an opportunity later that inning after Colson Montgomery singled, Chase Meidroth walked. Now he was, there were runners on first and third. Grichik actually replaced Meidroth on a fielder's choice, but with one out and runners on first and third in the bottom of the sixth with the game all tied up, that seemed like the moment when the White Sox failed to get a run across, where the game really did shift. Because had the White Sox been able to take the lead in that instance, I'm curious to know what would have happened. Unfortunately, they didn't. Then you go into the top of the seventh, and unfortunately, Brian Hudson, who has been fabulous, an extremely great find by Chris Getz so far this year, he had an issue in the seventh and finally had his scoreless inning streak snapped. Now, he came into the game with a 17 2/3 innings scoreless streak going. He actually recorded two outs in the seventh to push that streak to 18 1/3, but a couple runs would come home to score and snap Hudson's streak. And after that, eighth inning, things went sideways on the White Sox. Cubs would add four more to the two that they scored in the seventh to push it to 10-4. The only bright spot, though, coming in the ninth when Jared Kelnick actually homered for his first time in a White Sox uniform.
There's a swing and a fly ball, well hit out into center. It's deep, and she's going to go. Jared Kelnick with his first home run with the White Sox. It's 10-5.
That was in the second level of shrubbery in straightaway center field. It's where the big boys hit him.
I'm not going to lie. Jared Kelnick has a lot of talent. He has high draft pick pedigree, top five pick in his draft class. Somebody who was a key piece in the trade when the Mets acquired Edwin Diaz, one of the best closers in baseball when he's healthy, signed a big deal with the Dodgers in this offseason. Kelnick was really the key piece that went back to the Mariners in the trade for Edwin Diaz. And so I will tell you that I like the fact that he's getting an opportunity to play virtually every day as a 26-year-old. Truth is, in modern baseball, you just never quite know sometimes what's going to unlock a player. And I'm not saying we've gotten to that point with Jared Kelnick, but for comparison's sake, I was thinking about this the other day. J.J. Bleda, who is now playing for his third different organization with the Cincinnati Reds. I don't know if you've seen what J.J. Bleda has been doing for the Reds, but he was, again, a top five pick in his draft class for the Marlins. Had a little bit of success with both the Marlins and A's, but ultimately they decided to move on from him. He catches on with the Reds this year. Didn't make the big league camp out of spring training, but has since gotten the call, and he has really figured some things out for them. And again, he's 26 years old. He has 6 home runs and 18 RBIs in, I think it was 16 games for the Reds. I mean, he's been destroying the baseball. And again, high pedigree kid, lefty. So Jared Kelnick, I don't know. We shall see. He's played some solid defense. He homers last night. I really like the opportunity for him to play here in Chicago. So I wanted to mention that after he homers last night. But the Cubs do go on to win 10-5. One thing I did want to mention here, though, as well, Chris Getz, who we're going to let you hear from in its entirety later here in White Sox Weekly. But he talked about, with Carmen and Yurko yesterday, putting this team together and some interesting spots where the front office is actually getting inspiration from these days.
I felt really good about how we've gone about things the last couple of years. You know, this is year three for me as general manager and, you know, year two with Will. And it's like, man, we feel like we've made some really sound decisions, some good hires. Man, it's got to turn at some point. And, yeah, just didn't feel it early on that first couple series, but thankfully we've gone on a good run. It's a talented team. The clubhouse, man, I gotta say, the group of guys that we have in there, they're leading us, and it's now, you know, the front office job, everyone else, I just need to fuel that room somehow, some way, find a way, because they're showing up, they're figuring out how to win baseball games.
For joining Carmen and Yurko yesterday, again, we'll let you hear that in its entirety at 5 o'clock today. But one more here from Chris Getz. It was funny. Carmen was joking with the White Sox general manager, and he asked him specifically, hey, do you happen to know which team in your career you had your highest OPS against?
Is it the Cubs?
It's the Cubs. A 916 career OPS against the Cubs, Chris Getz.
Wow. Well, I guess I might have to suit up tonight, Ted.
I think you might. Just like osmosis.
I'll put together a contract. Right. <for my job. laughs>
That tickled me yesterday. Put together a contract for himself for maybe this series. Nevertheless, that was a good interview that we'll share with you coming up later here on White Sox Weekly. Hey, join us for $5 Tuesdays. All fans will enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu, including draft beers from Miller Lite or Modelo, Garrett Popcorn Stadium, Buttery, Vienna Beef Hot Dogs, or Polis Sausages, Beggar's Pizza Slices, Nachos, and select Coca-Cola products. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesdays. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, you know that the tide is turning with the White Sox when they get national recognition. That's exactly what happened yesterday on Major League Baseball Network. I'll share that with you next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Mellor back here on White Sox Weekly. Join us at the ballpark on Memorial Day, May 25th, as the White Sox take on the Twins at 1:10 p.m. 10,000 fans at the ballpark will receive a Chase Meidroth bobblehead presented by the Village of Bedford Park. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. So you know that the White Sox have really started to turn the corner when all of a sudden MLB Central, the daily Monday through Friday show on MLB Network, is leading off their coverage with a White Sox feature. And that is exactly what happened yesterday as Mark DeRosa gave us his breakdown of the White Sox with a nod to the 2008 film The Breakup, starring Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston. And DeRosa gave us his version of the White Sox tour that he envisions going on these days on the South Side.
Yeah. You've seen the movie The Breakup?
I love it.
Of my favorite movies.
I have seen
That's peak Vince Vaughn, peak Jennifer Aniston.
The Tone Rangers on the kick drum. Come, come.
When he's got the dude that she's going out with and they're playing Madden, and he goes, does it feel good to be a champion? Yes. Yes, it does.
Good. So good.
It was so good. So in that movie, Vince Vaughn and his brothers own the tour bus company, mm-hmm. and they're going to take Chicago by land, sea, and air.
That's
remember,
right. That's right.
We're going to get
the
squids.
Are the White Sox on there?
Well, Will Venable opened up a Chicago boat tour. You didn't notice, did you? Hey, get on board, please. Where are we going first? You ever done this? This seems like it would be a great time. First stop, Navy Pier. Heard of it? Who's on the Ferris wheel? Chase Meidroth and Sam Antonacci are riding the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier. You want to know why? They like to have fun. Youthful energy has been infused into this team and this lineup. Chase Meidroth is hitting .330 over his last 26 games with 21 runs scored. And Sam Antonacci, who we all saw for Team Italy, is hitting .338 with 9 extra base hits over his last 22 games. He's got just 10 punch outs in that span. Puts the ball in play. Tough ABs all over the place. Next stop on our tour, the Miguel Vargas History Museum.
I've never been there.
Yeah, I've never been there either. But I dove deep on this guy. Did you know he has a .421 on base percentage with 8 homers in his last 25 games? But did you know his father, Lazaro, is one of the most legendary Cuban baseball players?
I didn't know this.
Winning 2 Olympic gold medals in 1992 and 1996, and he's got over 2,000 hits in 22 seasons in Cuba. So you want to learn a little bit of history about the Miguel Vargas family? That's where you head over to. There's 2 new skyscrapers that went up amongst the skyline.
Really?
Yeah, we got the Murakami Plaza, not to be confused with Nakatomi Plaza.
That's right.
From Die Hard. Okay, Murakami's got 15 homers. He trails only Aaron Judge in the American League. He also has a .371 on base percentage due to his 97th percentile walk rate, almost 18%. And then a new hotel opened next door. It's called the Colson. I would stay at a posh Colson hotel. Slugging .602 with 5 doubles and 8 bombs over his last 23 games. Let's keep it going. I want to see some art. Take me to an art institute. Yeah, the Martin and Burke Art Institute. That would be Davis Martin and Sean Burke. Davis Martin has a 1.6 ERA. It ranks 3rd amongst MLB qualifiers.
Really?
He trails only Ohtani and Cam Schlittler. He has been fantastic. They are getting starting pitching performances from this rotation. And Sean Burke, since the start of April, how about a .338 ERA? Opposing hitters, they're hitting just .212 against them. So they're getting it on the mound. They're getting an influx of youth in the lineup. They have 2 stars in Murakami and potentially Colson Montgomery. And you know what? There's a couple of buildings they picked up off the waiver wire. They're under construction right now. Potential teardowns, and then we rebuild.
Ooh, the reno.
To our liking. A nice reno piece. Maybe a Randall Grichuk, who we saw in the highlight rib. 5 for 16 with 3 bombs and 7 RBIs since his first game with the White Sox. How about my boy Hill right there? Limited May action. He's 3 for 10. Two of those hits leaving the yard. An OPS near 800 this season. And then Jarrett Kelnick. Making moves, 8 for 28 in his last 10 games with 3 RBIs. So get on board the Will Venable Chicago Boat Tour and take a, you know, tour to see.
Maybe Jennifer Aniston's on there.
She might be.
Perhaps we should start calling him Will Grabowski. That's a deep pull. Of course, Vince Vaughn's character, his name was Gary Grabowski, one of the Grabowski brothers that DeRosa was referencing in the 2006 film, The Breakup. So I enjoyed that yesterday on MLB Network, MLB Central there, Mark DeRosa breaking down the White Sox. And as I said, that's how you know that things are changing here on the South Side when the White Sox are leading off the A block on MLB Network with their daily show. So that was pretty cool to watch. And of course, it only led to the excitement that was here yesterday at Wright Field in front of a sold-out crowd, 38,723 yesterday in attendance, first sellout of the year. And tonight, another sellout coming your way. So should be another festive atmosphere here as the White Sox get set to take on the Cubs in game number 2 of 3 today here at Wright Field. Grab your friends and head to the park for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Get one ticket and 2 beers starting at $24. You must be 21 years and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, Darren Jackson, half of the broadcast team here on ESPN 1000, joins me, and we'll talk about what we've seen from the White Sox so far, a little bit more than a quarter of the way through the season. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, weekdays, 9 to noon, ESPN Chicago.
Things we need to improve in there.
Thank you, I love you too, Darren.
So that was Davis Martin when DJ was walking by him in a post game, telling him how awesome he was. And now it's my opportunity to tell DJ how awesome he is on White Sox Weekly. Jeff Meller back here at Wright Field as we're getting set for game number 2 of 3 between the White Sox and Cubs. Crosstown series. DJ, you know this rivalry very well because you've been, well, I know you've kind of been a part of it from both sides, but maybe not really, because when you were with the Cubs, there was no interleague play going on, right?
No, there was no interleague play, but we had the Crosstown Classic.
That's true.
We had 2 games that I played in, and one was over at Wrigley Field, and the other one would have been over at Old Comiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only time I ever played a game in Old Comiskey was that one game, and it was historic, to say the least.
What happened?
The stadium I'm talking about was historic.
Yes, yes, yes.
It was nice.
Okay. That was your only time playing at Old Comiskey.
Yeah, and it was memorable because I remember I was crazy enough to voluntarily say, hey, I can play third base. And I found out that's only a good thing to do if you want to take your life in your own hands.
Yeah.
Because there were shadows cutting across Old Comiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Batter was in the sunlight, and I was in the shade. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm not seeing the ball very well.
Sure.
And if somebody hits the ball really hard to me, I could die. So I had a real appreciation for getting my butt back into the outfield after that.
When did you just play? When was the last time you had played third base?
Never.
Not even in, like,
yeah,
Little League?
No, I played shortstop and pitch.
Sure. So
second base, shortstop, pitch, give me the, and catcher.
DJ's like, give me the hot corner.
Yeah.
But it was truly an exhibition back then. That was the old Crosstown Classic days when the White Sox basically crushed the Cubs every year. They had that insane streak. I mean, you know, we have younger listeners who have no idea what I'm talking about, but they basically, at least the story goes, the Cubs were like, all right, let's knock this nonsense off, because the White Sox just, in these one-off exhibition games, kept beating their brains in.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it, absolutely. And thanks, Jeff, for reminding me.
Well, listen, now you're a member of the good guys, so it's...
Yeah, in my last year...
If you can't beat them, join them, DJ.
I think in my last year with the White Sox in 99, we played over at Wrigley, and I think I got a pinch hit at bat, and that's about the extent of it. I don't think I played in any of the series, really. It was, you know, hey, old man, just go sit over there and help coach the young players.
So What, speaking of young players, what have you seen from the White Sox so far? We're a little bit more than a quarter of the way through the season, and I mean, I don't need to tell you, but the fan base has truly been energized by what they've been able to see so far this year. And I mean, you don't want to get ahead of yourself because it still is just 44 games in, but it certainly feels completely different than what we've seen over the last couple seasons.
You're right. I think the players now are kind of technically and fundamentally just better baseball players than what we've had in the past. Mm-hmm. We've kind of stacked that up throughout the minor leagues as well. So if you have like any missing part, somebody goes down, you can go down and get something similar. Guys that know how to play the game better and make fewer mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun to see. It's fun to see less mistakes, not repeated time and time again, because they just don't get it and they're learning at the big league level when they didn't have enough reps in the minor leagues. You see a Sam Antonacci, you see a Chase Meidroth. I can name all these guys. Our fans already know them, but they all play the game hard. They play it efficiently. And it leads to better baseball, smarter baseball. And the coaching staff, I can't emphasize this enough, Jeff, that our coaching staff puts the work in, the repetitive work that makes these guys better. They don't let them forget how to do it right every day. And that's just phenomenal to watch. I don't think I've ever been around a coaching staff that's this kind of invested mm-hmm. with every motion that these players are making, physically or mentally. And it just makes them better. It helps them be the best that they can be. And it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Just, you know, I get a chance to, you know, talk with Will Venable pregame, every, you know, when they're at home here. And you can just see he sets the tone, DJ. And, I mean, listen, it's a cliche for a reason in baseball, you know, one day at a time. But I cannot tell you, all these young players, they have, and I know it comes because it starts with Will, but that mantra is something that they have bought into, and it's so important because it's easy, like last night, I think, to kind of like walk into this, you know, walk onto the field and see, okay, all of a sudden the stadium's full now, and to not let that overwhelm you and get outside of your game.
Well, you're right. It's all dependent on how you know, feel about big crowds and pressure, because you're going to feel more pressure the bigger the crowd is if you let that in. Mm-hmm. Or you can sit there and go, this is what I'm talking about. Hello. I go back to my first big league game. It was about as big a game of the week that you can have. It was Monday Night Baseball, New York City, packed house in Shea Stadium. And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you run out on the field and you realize, I mean, there's 40,000 people here in your first game. And you have to have a mechanism within that just goes, who cares?
Yep.
You know, that doesn't matter. Just go out and play the game. You know, it's still baseball. I think the guys that struggle at the big league level, they haven't found that mechanism yet to let the stress go.
Sure.
They still feel it, and that holds them down, and it takes them longer to get back where they need to be, because these guys all have talent or they wouldn't be here.
I haven't asked you about this, DJ, but I did ask Will about it the other day, and he admitted it has kind of been something that has kind of naturally come to fruition here. But the top six in his order, he's starting to fall into, like, especially against righties, Antonacci leading off, Murakami hitting second, Vargas hitting third, Montgomery cleaning up, Meidroth in that fifth spot, and then Benintendi, he even mentioned his name, as kind of the guy he likes in that sixth spot. What have you thought about that? Because we've seen over the last, you know, 15 years, that has not really been the norm in baseball. But some of the really good teams like the Dodgers, they kind of still know who their 1-6 hitters are.
Great point. It's funny because just recently while I was writing down my lineup and I wrote down those six names you just mentioned, and I went, I don't have to really look this up anymore. This is every day. I can kind of just write these guys down in the slot. I look at it every day because I'm wondering who's going to be inserted to give somebody a day off.
Sure. Because
the manager wants to insert somebody off the bench and keep them fresh and give somebody a little blow. So it's interesting when you look at this and they change it up. You're like, yeah. Oh, okay, Chase is batting lead off. Oh, there's a lefty. Because
yeah.
There's a bit of a rhythm and a theme to what they're doing with lefties, too.
Yep, definitely.
I love it. And I'm going to tell you, the players love it, too. Because I think the best thing you can do from day in to day out is let the players know ahead of time, hey, you're playing tomorrow. Just be aware. Same spot. You let them know they can go home that night and already visualize what's going to take place the next day. So the best thing I think this staff does is let these guys know, hey, rinse and repeat, buddy. It's going to be the same thing tomorrow.
Yeah, and it, you know, it is. It's something I took note of it because all of a sudden, like you said, same thing. I'm putting in the lineup every day, jotting it down as I'm getting ready for the pregame show. And, like, I can't tell you, I think it was at least the first 20, I think it might have been the first 25, 26 games where it was different lineup every single day. And kind of understood because Antonacci really hadn't arrived yet. Or if he had, you know, Will was easing him in at the lower part of the order. But now that Antonacci has established himself at the top, all of a sudden, one through six, it does feel like there's, you know, a rhythm to what he's putting together. And I don't know what you can really, you know, glean from this other than they're more productive. You know, and I don't know if it's just because they know where they're hitting each and every day, but it just seems to make a lot of sense.
So I can tell you this from talking to managers in the past, and I always ask that question, what you're addressing now is, if you could every day, would you put the same nine guys in there, aside from inserting a backup catcher for a game or a second baseman with a day, would you put the same leadoff man to the number nine man every day? And he goes, absolutely. If I had that kind of lineup, because he knows that lineup's that good, mm-hmm. he doesn't need to change it. That means you've finally arrived. You are where you need to be.
Yeah.
And look at that. You just mentioned six guys.
Yeah. Huh?
So I'm not saying we've arrived. I don't think our manager or coaching staff's in it. But the guys that are here right now are so consistently successful in those locations. Why would you change it?
No doubt.
They're on a winning streak. They're playing great. Their best baseball as individuals. They're playing their best baseball as a unit. So right now, I mean, you're watching the White Sox after 102 losses last year. You're watching them play big league baseball at a competitive level, and it's just like that. So Chris Getz and crew, the baseball department have all kind of pieced this together to where our fans should be coming out here and really enjoying baseball.
There's no doubt about it. And, you know, Sam Antonacci, he's a spark plug. We saw it in spring training. We saw it in the World Baseball Classic. You saw it, you know, probably a little bit last year, too. But it is surprising how quickly he was able to just kind of establish himself at the major league level, being that spark plug at, and I don't think you can't deny the fact that it doesn't matter. Even though guys like Chase Meidroth, Miguel Vargas always run hard, still, Antonacci has brought it to another level, it feels like, and everybody else feeds off of that.
Well, you're right, but, you know, you find it's very rare to find a character like him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Built mm-hmm. like he is,
yeah.
where he is Pete Rose style. I mean, let's go. I'm only here to beat you. And that's what you want. You want somebody or all of your players to say, I'm here for one reason today. That's to beat you, the opponent, any way I can. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I'm here to make you lose today. And Antonacci's that guy. And I think our whole team is proven to be like that with different attitudes compared to Sam. Sam is like, you know, in your face. Ha, take that. I got to second base because you're a lazy ass. And you know what? That's a good way for somebody to say, I'm here, man, and I'm going to keep doing this until you stop me.
No, there's no doubt about that. Darren Jackson, you know that, of course, that voice joining me here on White Sox Weekly. All right, so Davis Martin, the stopper on the mound tonight, and it feels like, I'm sure Sox fans, well, you know, a little disappointed because for fans, it means more. You and Len talk about it all the time on the broadcast. We know that it's just one of 162 for the players. But for the fan bases, you know, you've got people in your lives who are Cubs fans who are going to be talking trash if the Cubs take 2 of 3 from the Sox here this weekend. So it feels a little bit more important for Davis Martin tonight on the mound. What have you seen from him in terms of growth and how he's gotten to this point where he's got the third best ERA in all of baseball?
Well, talking to Davis, he has that mechanism I was talking about a moment ago. He has the ability to go ahead and slow things down and be at peace within mm-hmm. the game. Because there's stressful moments, and that's usually when you have your biggest problem. And all of a sudden, you're standing there, and you've lost your command and your control. You're not getting chases. You're like, oh, man. How do you deal with that pressure? Do you try harder, and all of a sudden, it makes it worse?
Yeah.
Do you worry and try and be more careful? I can't afford to make a mistake. He's got the mechanism in place where all that's irrelevant. He's just going to make the pitch that he thinks he should the best way he can, and hopefully the results are great. Well, when you don't, I'm not going to say he doesn't care, but when you have the blasé kind of attitude, like, he can't hit this, but here you go.
Yeah.
Kind of, and he's getting the results because he's relaxed out there in the right way.
Yeah.
He's a competitor, too. So he's competitive, and I think in talking to him, I think mentally he's about as good as he can be every day. It's a hard thing to do every start to be mentally in the strongest spot you can possibly be to compete, but he is. And it's because of his preparation mentally before and during the actual game.
And, I mean, this is something probably young players can't necessarily help, but there has to be something to just maturity, right? He's 29 years old now. He's been around. He's done it. He's seen it a little bit at the major league level. And he's gone through, you know, some of the worst seasons in White Sox history over the last couple of years. So it also has to be like, hey, you know what? We've seen the worst of it. It can't get any worse than this.
Right. I mean, the experience that he's already gone through, you're exactly right. And when you can look at it that way, when you can apply it can't get any worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't do anything but relax
because yeah.
you've already expected the worst, lived through the worst, and now it's only going to get better from there. But you mentioned the maturity. I think Davis has been mature since he's gotten here. I think he dealt with the injury and the recovery. He's been the same person, just a great person the mm-hmm. whole time he's been here. I just think he's got to the spot where he's healthy as hell,
yeah.
and he trusts everything that he's throwing to the plate. And again, he's relaxed. He's not putting pressure on himself, which usually leads to failure.
Darren Jackson joining me here for another couple minutes on White Sox Weekly. So Braden Montgomery, he's been getting a lot of run in center field in AAA now since he's gotten the promotion. He had quite a bit in AA as well. I'm curious what you think about him and kind of just the White Sox testing him in center field, and if you think whether it be, you know, later this season or, you know, maybe for, you know, the longer part of his career, do you think center field is actually a spot that Braden Montgomery might be able to handle for the White Sox?
Well, I think he can handle it. We started our season with a shortstop in center field. So
that is true.
So Braden,
it can't get yes.
Braden is he's an outfielder. So
Specifically, though, because you obviously had a great career as a center fielder, you shifted to the corner later in the career. So what does he need to, like, handle and be able to do as a guy who probably played more as a corner outfielder starting his minor league career? But, you know, how do you play effective center field?
I think the number one thing for somebody like Braden it's not complicated, is go out there, know that you're the captain,
mm-hmm.
and have great communication with your corner guys. The best thing I ever did as a center fielder was I talked to my left fielder and right fielder before a ball was ever hit.
Okay.
I said, anything here is yours. Go 100%. I've got behind you, or I've got in front of you. You got behind me. So I made my guys next to me think about the ball being hit in those spaces. And when they were hit, they reacted immediately knowing it was their ball.
Yeah.
It's a different reaction if you don't have the communication ahead of time, because the ball's hit. And now you're looking at the guy next to you. It's like, is he going to get there?
Mm-hmm.
But if you've already visualized this, the success rate goes way up because it's an easy play because you've already thought about it.
It's interesting because now this is completely ancillary, but, you know, I was out at spring training for a day earlier this year and just had a, you know, 5-10 minutes with Braden, and he has a little bit of that confidence, right? Like, so when you say, you know, you're the captain, I think, well, I don't know. I haven't been watching, you know, every pitch of the Charlotte Knights, so I can't tell you, you know, how he's handling it defensively. But at least from a personality standpoint, he seems like a guy who would really embrace the idea of being the captain of the outfield.
Well, I've talked to Braden just a little bit, just like you. And, I mean, to me, he seems like he's got the ability to be that guy. But long term, I really do imagine him being, I think they might look at him as right field.
Yes.
I really do. I think he's going to be a guy that you put in right field and you say, go get him, kid, and you don't look back. I give you a story. As a rookie, I had, Hall of Famer Andre Dawson next to me in right field. And, it's Andre Dawson, and I'm a youngster. I'm in center field. Ball's hit between Andre and I early in the season, and I go running, and Andre's coming, and it's one of these ones that's right in between both of us. And I'm like, oh, that's Andre Dawson. I'm thinking this as I'm running. He's going to, first of all, kill me if he runs into me.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, he's probably going to take charge of that. And it bounces. We pick it up, throw it back in. He looks at me, and he goes, hey, you're the center fielder. Take charge.
Yep.
I went, oh, Andre Dawson just told me to take charge. Okay, I guess it's okay to tell Andre Dawson what to do. That's what it took for me to take charge, is somebody to tell me it was okay rather than just assume it. So
yeah.
Braden Montgomery, wherever he's playing, if he's playing center field at this level, he's got to be told ahead of time, you're the captain, man. Go take charge.
Yeah.
Of course, with limitations. Let your other outfielders play too.
Yep,
they know how to catch the ball. Don't go call a ball in right field and left field from them when they can catch it, because they got to have the confidence as well.
That is Darren Jackson. DJ, great stuff as always. Appreciate you hopping on White Sox Weekly. We'll hear you and Len later today on the broadcast.
All right, Jeff, thank you for the time.
My pleasure. Again, Darren Jackson joining us on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we told you a lot about Sam Antonacci there. He joined Carmen and Jesse Rogers earlier this week on ESPN 1000. We'll let you hear that right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Things we need to improve in minutes.
Thank you. I love you too, Darren.
Follow Chicago's Over Sports on Twitch. ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Oh, is ripped on the ground out into right center. Antonacci's got a base hit. He's going to try for two, and the throw is a little off the mark, and he makes it. That was insane that he even thought about it. I'm telling you, less than 1% of the league would try for two on that ground ball. The 2-0. hit on the ground, backhanded by Lofton at second, and a terrible throw to first, and Antonacci's going to end up at second.
Antonacci was doing what he does, and that's run hard, and he got past first base, saw that there was nobody even close to backing up where that ball ended up, and he said, I'm off to second base now. Bye.
Sam Antonacci, the batter, and he just got hit, and he'll hobble down to first base. He's been hit 8 times already.
How about that? Sam Antonacci highlights, who you're going to hear from in a moment as he joined Carmen DeFalco and Jesse Rogers, who was in for Yurko right here on ESPN Chicago earlier this week. And you had Darren Jackson on the call, who we just had in the booth here on White Sox Weekly. And then Len Casper, of course, the voice of the White Sox, who we're going to let you hear from after Sam Antonacci. So lots of good stuff coming your way on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Join us celebrating Southpaw's birthday this season, folks. Head to the ballpark on Sunday, May 31st, as the White Sox take on the Tigers at 1:10. Fans will get pregame access to the best birthday party in the patio when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability to purchase tickets and prepaid parking. Visit whitesox.com/promos. So Sam Antonacci, the bundle of energy that he is, joined Carmen and Jesse Rogers earlier this week. And I think Carmen began by asking him about that energy he brings and just being a pest to the other team.
Yeah, that's what I try to do just every day, come to the field. There's going to be days where I don't hit or don't produce. So if I'm able to keep my energy up and just be a good teammate, that's all that really matters to me. And it was, you know, difficult at first to be my true self with just not knowing a bunch of new people and seeing where I stood. But the people, teammates and coaches and workers and stuff like that just coming up to me and telling me just be who I am and don't worry about anything was helped me a lot.
Sam, as you know, the White Sox are a vibe these days. Last couple nights, man, that locker room is loud afterwards. What's it like celebrating these tight victories and just this climb to 500 that you guys have made?
Yeah, it's fun. Well, winning baseball games in this league is not easy to do. So every time you're able to, you know, win a ball game and win a ball game as close as we've had the last few nights, it's awesome. So it needs to be celebrated. And then after, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of celebration, we're looking to the next day and how we can win.
You know, it's interesting, Sam, I mentioned this earlier in the show, like a lot of young players trying to establish themselves. That's kind of the norm, obviously, when you get first called up on a young team. But at the same time, you're also winning. Like you're learning the game at the major league level, but you're also winning games. What is that kind of like, even just for yourself?
Yeah, the reality is if you don't produce at this level, there's a lot more people that they can find to replace you, and then that's just the reality of it. But, you know, a lot of us don't really think like that, and we're just out there playing as fun and loose as we were when we were 10 years old playing. So I think that's the biggest thing that we're looking at it. We're not looking at it as, you know, our jobs necessarily, but just a fun game that we're having a ball out there.
Sam Antonacci is our guest. It's Carmen and Yurko. Jesse's in for Yurko on ESPN Chicago and the ESPN Chicago app. This is a franchise that's lost more than 100 games 3 consecutive years. So that's why this is so exciting and it's so welcome for Sox fans. And we've got a whole wide range of opinions here, Sam. Like some people think you guys could go to the World Series. Some people think you guys will still finish well below 500. Internally, is there ever any conversation about, you know, what the expectations are or any sort of limits you guys put on yourselves to how good you could be this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's not really any conversation. It's all just kind of, you know, known that we're a good ball club and we're never out of the fight any given night. But then again, we still have a lot of season left. You know, this is not our goal to have people talking about how we were 500 in the month of May. Our goal is to, you know, have people talking once the playoffs start and, you know, we put our best foot forward and just continue to lay this foundation in the proper steps we want this organization to go in. And, you know, we have our sights on just, you know, continuing to play good baseball and everything will take care of itself.
I want to go back to last night. You really were in the middle of everything.
Everything.
I know you probably wanted to make that diving catch and then you had the hustle double and hit by a pitch and just in the middle of everything. Just like, does your body feel it besides the hit by pitch the day after? Like, what's it like being involved in so much afterwards? Are you just exhausted or, you know, adrenaline just going high because of the win? What's it like?
Yeah, definitely exhausted. I feel like my gameplay is a little more hard on the body, but that's the chance I'm willing to take. I'd rather be a little bit more sore and knowing I gave everything that I got than being a little refreshed and have more energy, but knowing that, you know, I may have not given it my all. But, you know, that's why we pay and have a lot of good trainers here, good support, recovery systems. So they do a top-of-the-notch job, and thankful to just be able to get to work with them, and they get me ready for the next day.
Now, I saw you before the game with one of your coaches. What were you working on? Was that for outfield play or infield play? What were you working on there before the game? Take us through that drill. Before the game yesterday, I saw you on the field with one of the coaches, and you guys were doing, whether it be the ground ball, I'm not sure exactly what drills you were working on, but it looked like defensive drills.
Yeah, that was just infield work. I've been in the outfield every day, continue to get my work in out there. I know I need a lot more of it than I do infield work right now, but it's very important that I continue to hone in my craft in the infield and make sure that I'm ready if, you know, someone in the infield either needs an off day or just something out of the ordinary happens, that they have the confidence to, you know, put me in the lineup in the infield without questioning if I'll be able to go there.
Are you hard on yourself after that play in left field? Do you understand that it's just, you know, work in progress and that was a tough play?
Yeah, definitely work in progress. But at the end of the day, it's the major leagues. No one really cares that, you know, I'm at infield, playing the outfield, and that ball needs to be caught at the end of the day. Those are two of Schultz's runs that I wish he could have back, because I think, you know, above average elite outfielder makes that play 10 out of 10 times. And right now I'm just trying to get to that level and help my pitchers out.
You'll get your first taste of Cubs Sox this weekend here on the South Side. I feel like, so you grew up in Springfield. I feel like down that part of the state, I've always heard it's kind of like split Cubs Cardinals fan, maybe some Sox fans too. Were you a fan as a youth of either the Cubs, the Sox, or the Cardinals? Which was your team growing up?
Big Cardinals fan growing up.
Cardinals fan, okay.
Of Albert Pujols, Yachty, Waino, all them. Big Cardinals fan growing up. So
you hate the Cubs. This is perfect, right?
Yeah. When I got to meet Tony La Russa here for the Sox, it was pretty cool.
That's pretty good. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, I was saying, speaking of growing up, you know, after high school, you played at community college, Heartland Community College, and I've talked to a lot of ball players that started community college, and they seem to all have great experiences, like as a stepping stone thing. Is that the case with you?
Yeah, the community was great, especially, you know, a lot of my friends to this day I still talk to from there. Was able to win a national championship there, which is never easy, and just the people kind of shaped who I am today, and I still go back there every now and then, so it's very appreciative of Heartland.
Give us your recap from a couple of months ago with the WBC, because it was, I think, a wild, smashing success for baseball. I mean, USA's run, incredible, obviously. But you guys seem to be, like, the most fun, best part of the story, what was happening with Team Italy. Take us through what the experience was like.
It was amazing. Just getting to come together with a bunch of Italians who didn't know each other really before, getting together other than just maybe playing against each other for a little bit, and then, you know, spend 2 to 3 weeks together and then leaving like family. You know, I got to play, getting to play against Caglione and Pasquantino this series, and just to be able to catch up with them and see how they're doing and play against other teammates that I had on Italy throughout the season. It's pretty awesome. And I think we established what Italy baseball is, and a bunch of grinders who don't really care who we're playing. It's just next man up, and you know, it was a blast.
Whose idea was it to do the espresso after the home runs?
Definitely Vinny's. He had a lot of awesome. A lot of ideas.
Well,
the character.
Speaking of all which, right. You know, I'm standing next to a very proud Italian, and Carmen DeFalco. Proud. I mean, how else you can proud. Be nothing but Italian with that name?
That's true.
And same with Sam Antonacci. So we've got a little quick quiz for you. No real wrong answers.
What do you mean? No real wrong answers. It's either right or wrong.
Well, no, not all. Some are opinion. So I'll start easy.
Like, all right,
Sam, what's your favorite pasta?
Oh boy.
Ooh. I'm just like a chicken Alfredo guy. Like I love a good chicken Alfredo.
Carmen?
If I had to pick one pasta dish I'm going to eat for the rest of my life, it's probably cacio e pepe. That'd probably be...
So he has to get all fancy on us, Sam. Yeah, he has to get all fancy. All right, now this one you need to know. Where did Taylor Swift play in Italy? Which city? Do you know, Sam?
I'm not a Swifty, but I would say Rome.
Carmen?
I mean, I kind of agree with him. I'm going to go Oppo just in case. I'm going to say maybe she played up north somewhere. I'll say Milan.
It's Milan.
All right.
Are you sure you didn't see mine?
I did not.
I would have guessed Rome as well. By the way, Milan. Sam, I'm sure you were asked this. Have you been to Italy? Have you experienced it?
I have not. I've been looking to go this offseason.
You got
to
go.
Amazing. Amazing. Even for a Jew like me, I loved it there. sorry. All right. What's your favorite Italian dessert? I do like. Go ahead.
You want me to go first this time? My favorite Italian dessert is probably a sfogliatelle. It'd be my favorite Italian.
Again, he gets fancy with these fancy words. All right, Sam, you got one?
Definitely tiramisu.
Yeah,
that's a good one, too. That's probably my second favorite.
So good, so good. What is the Italian word for love? Sam, you know?
Sam, you know that one.
There's more? Amore?
Yeah, he's got it. Amore. Very good.
There you go.
Nice.
Now, I wouldn't know this, so I don't expect, you know, well, maybe I would. What are the three colors on the Italian flag? I guess I would know that, maybe.
Of course you would.
Maybe I would.
Sam could take that one.
Sam, do you know? Three colors?
Red, white, and green.
There you go.
Very good. Very good.
There you go. I think he knows more than you.
He wore the colors.
I think he knows more than you, Carmen.
I don't know about that.
That's about it.
That's it?
That's all.
Jesse, what a quiz. Sam, listen, we appreciate the time. Keep up the good work, man.
Wait, I have one more question.
Right,
one more question. Again, going back to those, who is crazy during your celebrations, whether it be dugout or clubhouse? Because, again, it feels even more over the top than I normally see with teams. Tell me, who's really nuts besides you?
Well, it was definitely Vassell, because that's just who he is, and I get to share a locker with him. So, not nice. Share a locker, but his locker's next to mine, so I get to see it all.
Good stuff there from Sam Antonacci. Speaking of Vassell, if we have time, we're going to try and let you hear a little bit of him inside the booth with Len and DJ last night. But first things first, we're going to let you hear from Len Casper, who joined Waddle and Sylvie yesterday at Cork and Kerry, getting set for the White Sox and Cubs showdown here on the South Side. Pre-gaming made easy. Treat your group to a patio party, 2 hours of all-you-can-eat, plus unlimited beer, wine, Coca-Cola products. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas or call 312-674-1000. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll let you hear from Len. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Sox on your phone, the ESPN Chicago app.
Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Saturday, May 30th, as the White Sox take on the Tigers at 110. 15,000 fans, 21 years and older, will receive a Teal and Carroll bobblehead presented by Binney's Beverage Depot. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Lineup today, Sam Antonacci leading off in left field, Murakami at first base batting second. Miguel Vargas will bat third and play third base. Colson Montgomery at shortstop cleans up. Chase Mydroth at second base hitting fifth. Andrew Benintendi, the DH today, hitting sixth. Jared Kelnick in right field batting seventh. Tristan Peters, your center fielder, hitting eighth. And then Drew Romo, the switch hitting catcher, rounds out the lineup for Will Venable. When we come back, we will let you hear from Chris Getz. Before we do that, though, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Chris Getz, the GM of the White Sox, joined Carmen and Yurko yesterday. We'll let you hear it right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
And Jay Hood, weekday morning, 6 to 9, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller, Saturday in the ballpark here at Wrigley Field, getting set for game number 2 between the White Sox and Cubs. Hopefully the White Sox behind Davis Martin can get themselves a win tonight. That would certainly be good. All right, so I'm excited. You're excited. Chris Getz is excited. He joined Carmen and Yurko yesterday afternoon ahead of this White Sox and Cubs series and started with the excitement of this series.
Kind of gets behind this series for the obvious reasons. It's just it's an added adrenaline boost. It is. The White Sox, you know, we're playing well right now. We're on a good run. And, you know, I think the best way to describe it is every night we've got a chance to win. And, you know, and you compare that to years past where, you know, objectively we were kind of up against it and need to play really clean baseball to win baseball games. But in this case, I think the talent is there and we're executing. So, to bring it back to your question. I think that there's an added excitement considering, you know, you're looking at what the Cubs are doing and the run that we're on. It's going to be a fun one. It always is. And looking forward to getting it going.
The first 3 weeks of the season, Chris, you guys were losing 2/3 of your games. Since then, you're winning 2/3 of your games. So we can talk about like what flipped it and things like that. But first, I'd like to know what you were thinking through 1-5 that first week, 6-13. To the first 19, because there were some expectations and we thought you guys were going to get better. And then it was like, oh, wait, maybe not. So I think it was tough for us as fans. What were you thinking through the early struggles, even though 19 games is a blip, it's 10% of your season? What was going through your mind at the time?
Well, you know, you're trying to, you know, diagnose what's going on, right? And obviously at the end of the day, you're getting measured by wins or losses. All right, what are we good at? What are we not good at? And candidly, our starters just were not going deep into games, and that was taxing our bullpen. And then we were playing catch up. So we just really, you know, we weren't really setting the tone. And therefore, what we felt like was a solid bullpen was getting overextended and not producing. You know, we needed to get some starters on track. You know, Shane Smith, you know, was struggled early on. And you know, he's down in AAA and unfortunately dealing with a shoulder issue. But we need to get him back on track. But we made a change there, and you know, we brought up Noah Schultz, who got off to a really good start and continues to give us quality outings and position us to win baseball games. Davis Martin made an adjustment, and he's been, you know, on a significant run, and you know, we started scoring runs. But early on, to assess that situation, I think it was mainly just those starters. If you have one or two guys, it's not going deep into the game. I mean, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
And put stress on all areas. So we got that on track. We started scoring some more runs when we went out to Sacramento and had some good road trips there, Arizona and some other places. I felt really good about how we've gone about things the last couple of years. You know, this is year 3 for me as general manager and, you know, year 2 with Will. And it's like, man, we feel like we've made some really sound decisions, some good hires. Man, it's got to turn at some point. And, yeah, just didn't feel it early on that first, you know, first couple series. But thankfully, we've gone on a good run. It's a talented team. The clubhouse, man, I got to say, the group of guys that we have in there, they're leading us. And it's now, you know, the front office job, everyone else. I just need to fuel that room somehow, some way, find a way, because they're showing up. They're figuring out how to win baseball games.
Who's giving you a little bit more than you expected?
Gosh, I mean, thankfully that there's a handful of guys. It's just not one or two. I mean, Davis Martin, for one. You look what, you know, he's accomplished so far. You know, Murakami, you know, has gotten a significant amount of attention as he should be getting. You know, that power production, Colson Montgomery, Miguel Vargas. You know, we've gotten, you know, a boost from Antonacci coming up here. And, you know, even Tristan Peters you know, some players that, you know, were up here to help us defensively. We knew that they could put together some quality bats. Guys are stepping up. But you look at what Miguel Vargas is doing, and Colson Montgomery and Murakami and Antonacci and Davis Martin. That's a you know, quality group of players that's performing really well right now.
Chris Getz is our guest. It's Carmen and York on ESPN Chicago and the ESPN Chicago app. When the offseason started, did you have in your mind this idea that, man, we've got to find a way to get Murakami, but it's going to be really hard. We're not going to be able to afford him. And then as the price came down, you realized, holy cow, like, we do have a shot at this guy. Like, what were your internal discussions and projections for the player? Because he seems to be surprising everyone. I guess I'm wondering how much he's surprising you guys.
Well, you know, candidly, you know, the way our off seasons have gone and this past one in particular, you know, the process kind of takes care of itself. All right, where are we shopping? I mean, you look at free agency, the timing of that trade activity, and it's like, all right, we want to raise the floor in this area, this area, this area. It can show up in different ways. It's not, hey, we're just going to target this position or this player. And, you know, there's a uniqueness, there's a pace to it. Yeah, we had interest in Murakami. The industry predicted him to have, you know, a lengthier contract, really significant dollars. And so, yeah, we just didn't think it was realistic, but they knew that we were interested. And then as the market, you know, took shape, and, you know, the posting window is 30 days when it comes to the overseas players coming here. And, you know, sometimes, you know, that overlays with other free agents that are still out there, which can affect the market and just that free agency in general for that particular player. And it lined up for us. And, you know, I do credit Excel and Bobby Barrett and Casey Close. They've got a handful of our players. They're very familiar with, you know, what we have going on here. They identified us as a place that this is a good fit for Murakami. And, you know, and on our side of things, what a chance to, you know, get the Japanese fans watching the Chicago White Sox and learning what we're doing here.
Yeah. Would you like to get a long-term deal done with him?
Everything's on the table. I mean, our goal from the beginning has been, let's get him as comfortable as possible. You know, we got a player that's coming over from Japan, doesn't know any of his teammates. Let's get him comfortable off the field. You know, he referenced knowing some of the Cubs players with Shota and Seiya. And, you know, so he got feedback from them about, you know, how great the city is. And then on our end, we worked with them. We asked questions. What can we do to help? And you know, he's been able to go out there and just play baseball. He mixes in well with his teammates. His work ethic is off the charts. He's got, you know, he's a great teammate. He's got a great sense of humor. He just fits really well. So, you know, I say all of that because we just want him to focus on playing baseball and relax and have fun and do his thing. And the rest will kind of take care of itself.
In a question I never thought I'd ask about the 2026 Chicago White Sox, are you guys in a position now where you might think about adding someone at the trade deadline? And I know it's early.
Well, we're always looking to add. I mean, it's just a, you know, whether it be discussions with other clubs, you know, there's free agents like a Randall Grichuk that becomes available and you add him. We're still, you know, forming as a team. And obviously, unfortunately, there's injuries that are going to pop up along the way. And then there's areas that, you know, are perhaps not producing like you would prefer. And so you're always on the outlook. So, you know, we're off to a nice start. It's certainly welcome. The players will let us know. They've been leading us. What they're doing in the clubhouse is fantastic. And then, you know, one thing that hasn't been talked about too much, at least here recently, is Kyle Teal hasn't been with us right. yet. So we're going to get him back next week. And what a boost. I mean, he's one of the top young catchers in the game. We've seen what he was able to do last year with us. You know, and the way he plays, what he can do behind the dish, his power on base, his base running, all of that's going to be a significant boost for us. So, you know, we'll see where things take us. But, you know, Will and I, we really just focus on one game at a time, a series at a time, and then we're on to the next.
What drew you to Will Venable when you started that process a year and a half ago?
Wait, say it again. I'm sorry.
What drew you to Will Venable when you started this whole process of having to replace a manager? What was it a couple years ago when you started that made him intriguing to you?
Well, we actually interviewed him a couple years ago. You know, when we had a vacancy, and you know he was just getting his coaching career going. But you know, through that, I just getting to know him, the person, the intelligence, the demeanor. You know, his background, his dad played in the big leagues for a while. So he grew up around the clubhouse. Obviously, you know, he played in the big leagues himself for an extended amount of time. Princeton grad, you know, basketball player, the personality, the consistency. And when you've got a group that, you know, is rebuilding, you got an organization that's going to have to be patient and really think big picture. I just knew that, you know, he wasn't going to get caught up in the ups and downs of a major league season and just, you know, really have, you know, a vision and be able to carry that out and have the patience and the communication skills to you know, work through this. And he and I have a great relationship, a great rapport, you know, and he breathed life into the coaching staff and the players, and it's shown that. So we feel fortunate to have him, and he's doing a really nice job.
He seems to check all those boxes, like you just mentioned, because I know a lot of the game in today's era is definitely played with advanced analytics and a computer and a very specialized game plan, you know, going in. There's maybe not as much like gut feel throughout the course of a game from a manager like it was in the old days. It seems to be you've got to find a good one that can do all the things you just said. And I mean, the returns, I think, have been great just by the vibe and the energy that you guys have in that clubhouse. Like he seems to be doing all the things that you envisioned when you set down the path of hiring him to make him your next manager.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're always looking to support your manager, your coaching staff and your players. But you know, the way that Will conducts himself, you know, it's just going to be, I knew it was going to be so easy. It's like, no one's going to let Will Venable fail. No one's going to want to do that. So you got everyone, perhaps, you know, working a little bit harder and, you know, just going about it the right way. So, you know, that's just Will. That's how, you know, he was raised well in the game. And, you know, I think that's, you know, why he's a great fit here. We feel like it is working.
A couple more minutes with Chris Getz from the White Sox. It's Carmen and York on ESPN Chicago, the home of White Sox baseball. You mentioned a little tweak Davis Martin made. He's gone from being, and I think Sox fans know this, even through some really bad years. Like, Davis Martin is a quality big league pitcher. I think we all thought that going into the season. He's moved into possibly elite territory with what he's done. What was the change? Why has he been so good?
Well, you know, for one, you got the work ethic and the intelligence and, you know, the conviction in which he's always kind of operated, but this pursuit of trying to get better. I know, you know, recently he spoke about, he went into this offseason, you know, really it wasn't about adding a new pitch or doing anything significant. It was just maximizing the arsenal that he had. But early on, I will say, I mean, he hadn't taken form yet. You know, he made some adjustments with his posture. It was identified, and he was able to, you know, make an adjustment and really attack the zone and get to work. So it's. You know, he's getting ahead. He's got weapons to get guys out, both-sided hitters. And, you know, he's a leader. He's a leader amongst the pitching group, just the group in general. You know, he's kind of the go-to guy, and I don't want to say a spokesman for the pitching group, but he's just got that presence about him. So off to a great start. We're always, you know, excited when he's taken the mound. He's pitched well. I mean, he's gone deep into the games and days that, you know, our bullpens may be a little taxed from the prior games. He shows up and he's given us 7-8 innings at times, but we just expect a quality start out of him just because, yeah, he's capable of doing that.
Two more quick things, then we'll let you go. Colson Montgomery, it was about a year ago this time, you guys were sending him away from the minor leagues to Arizona to work one-on-one, and let's face it, I mean, I think the reaction from most around baseball was like, holy cow, this is a disaster. By July 4th, he gets called up, and since that time, a year ago, about a year and a half's worth of season, he has been, by the eye test and by just about every metric offensively and defensively, truly probably one of the five best shortstops in baseball. What were you honestly hoping for when you guys called him up July 4th of last year, considering what the spring was like for him a year ago?
Well, you know, I rewind back to when we drafted him, and you know, the thing about Colson, he's always been under control. There's always been a you know, no rush, even tempered, you know, defensively. There was always consistency. His throws were always, you know, on target. And we're talking about a player that, you know, played a lot of basketball. He was a Midwest kid. So just the exposure to greater competition and all of that, like, you thought it was going to take a minute, but early on in the minor leagues, he took to it very well. I remember there was, he went on the IL for, you know, a stretch, let's call it weeks to a month, maybe a little bit over that. And, you know, oftentimes with, you know, guys with higher status prospects, you feel the pressure to make sure that they're well positioned to go out there and perform. So that layoff, all right, well, we're just going to put him back in the lineup when he's ready. Do we send him to Arizona to get some at bat, you know, to perhaps, you know, protect his numbers, so to speak. And I remember having that conversation with him. He goes, no, I'm good to go. I don't want to go to Arizona. I just want to play. He goes, I don't care if I go 0 for 50. Well, he was better than he was prior to the injury. I mean, this guy, you know, he kind of had a big picture understanding of where things were going to go and wasn't worried about, you know, struggling for a period of time. So that meant a lot to me, because that's a rarity. Just that fearlessness. So when, you know, I would say more struggles started to creep in as he moved up to the upper minor leagues, I still had a lot of faith. And he, most importantly, had faith in himself. And he just, I knew he wasn't going to give up. There were some mechanical adjustments that needed to be made, but really a mental reset. And, you know, he's got a real engine at the plate. Mm-hmm. And now with guys like that, we've got others, you know, in our lineup as well. If not controlled correctly, it can really get out of whack. Mm-hmm. and not be right. And sometimes you just feel like you're lost. So he got that back on track, under control. We found a nice window to bring him up last year, and he was off and running. Did I expect him to do what he did? Not necessarily, but you know, I can't say that I'm surprised either, just because of the talent that he brings to the table, and you know, he's off and running this year as well.
It's a truly great story. All right, can you give us a hint as to when any of the other young exciting guys might be coming up? Obviously Teal's going to be back, as you mentioned, which is great news, but Braden Montgomery, Hagen Smith, like, any little hint of when Sox fans can expect those guys later this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when they're ready. I mean, I know it's cliche, you know, Braden, for one, he just got to AAA. He's off to a nice start, got three hits last night, playing a really good center field. And, you know, we're very comfortable with him on the wings as well. There's going to be a pocket for him. There is. And Hagen, you know, the same thing is, you know, he was cruising through four innings his last outing and got to the fifth and got behind some guys and they tacked on some runs, but the stuff is real. I mean, you can look at the strikeouts, but the command, you know, does do need to improve and some consistency with some of his pitches. So once he locks that in, he'll be a great addition. To say that I've got a specific date in mind or anything like that, that's not true. They'll let us know and look forward to having him add to this group.
Do you know, in your playing career, the opponent which you had the highest career OPS against? Do you know which opponent it was?
Is it me personally?
You personally, yeah.
Jeremy Guthrie, maybe?
No, no, which team? Which team? Sorry, not pitcher. Oh, which team?
Is it the Cubs?
It's the Cubs. A 916 career OPS against the Cubs, Chris Getz.
Wow. Well, I guess I might have to suit up tonight then.
I think you might. Just like osmosis.
I'll put together a contract.
Right. <for
myself.
laughs> Run through the clubhouse.
A three-day.
Run through the clubhouse. Let it, you know, like one of your old bats. Everybody touch this right here. Here we go. Let's go. 916 career OPS. I love it.
There you go. Cubs killer, Chris Getz with Carmen and Yurko yesterday. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Ultimate Postgame Concerts Package. The winner will receive two tickets to three White Sox home games, plus on-field access to the three postgame concerts that follow. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Jeff Meller here. When we come back, we'll wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.